Welcome to the We Are History podcast. I'm John O'Farrell.
And I'm Angela Barnes.
What are we talking about today, Angela?
Well, John, I think you'll agree that Great Britain has not had enough of talking about referendums.
Very good.
So we have decided to talk about the EU referendum, but not the 2016 EU referendum. 1975.
The EEC referendum.
EEC, of course, it wasn't the EU then, was it?
The common market.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, we thought people would be fascinated to know what happens when a government goes to the polls and says to the people, you decide whether we're in the common market or not.
Yeah, it's always a roaring success. I think what's interesting is, you know, there's lots of talk at the moment. Here we are at the moment in 2019. Of whether we can have a second referendum.
Yes.
But of course, the referendum we had in 2016 was the second referendum.
Good point.
Referendum.
Never hear Nigel Farage say that, do you?
No.
It's one each at the moment. It's one all.
Right.
It's going
so
to extra time.
We'll have a decider.
We'll have a decider, extra time.
Decider.
And then it's penalties with Anne Widdecombe in goal and Gina Miller stepping up, puts it at the back of the net. Miller scores. So this was a referendum held after the UK had joined the common market in 1973.
Yeah. And it was the first referendum in Britain, right?
Yeah.
So this was a new idea.
It was a new idea and something that was quite sort of sneered at by the political establishment in the decades running up to it. It was always seen as the a device of demagogues and dictators, the sort of thing that Napoleon III or Hitler or Mussolini. Mussolini, incidentally, when I mentioned him, my daughter went, oh, I thought Mussolini was a type of pasta.
Is that true?
Yes, it is true.
What would Mussolini pasta look like?
I'll have Mussolini bolognese, please. So Mussolini held them. Napoleon III sort of managed to hold on to power with them. Mm-hmm. And they were sort of not, you know, we have a parliamentary democracy in Britain. So the idea that the people should sort of be asked directly on issues. And Harold Wilson, who was the Prime Minister at the time of this referendum, said that if we had a referendum on whether we should abolish income tax, of course the answer would be 100% yes.
Yeah.
I should just say that Andrew and I take turns to lead on these podcasts. So I'm going to be doing a lot of the talking on this one because I was the one who suggested this because I'm really boring about 1970s.
And you were alive,
politics.
John, in 1975, and I just wasn't.
Well, you're not alive. That's
I was born in 76.
Were you? That's amazing.
I was.
See, I remember the 75 referendum.
You did. How old were you?
I was 13, and
right.
I think it's the first time I disagreed with my parents on a political issue.
Right.
Because they were both for in, and back then...
You were a leaver, John.
Well, it was not leaver then, it was out. So I took the side.
John O'Farrell was
I was 13, and Tony Benn was for out, and Barbara Castle and Michael Foot, the left of the Labour Party, was for out.
Yeah.
And so I aligned myself with them. Whereas my parents were more Roy Jenkins and Shirley Williams and the right of the Labour Party. Oh. And so I remember at the time thinking that, I've got a different opinion to my parents. So anyway, the thing to say about the Euro referendum is that it was a huge win for staying in. I think that's not a spoiler because we know that we were in the common market until quite recently. And but what people don't remember about it is that 6 months or a year earlier, the polls were showing a huge lead for getting out.
Right. So there was a huge swing happened during
during the campaign, and they completely turned it around. So that's sort of what we're going to be examining today.
Yeah.
So should we have a little bit of background on Europe?
Yeah, so where were we? It's 1975.
Flares.
Lots of flares.
Tank tops.
And interesting hairstyle.
Terrible sideburns.
Did you have long hair at 13?
I did have very long, really long hair. Ridiculous. Yeah, awful. And I remember my Welsh rugby teacher pulling me around by the hair and goes, if it's not cut by next week, I'll do it myself. I was like, I was so scared all week.
Your teacher from Bangladesh.
He always says, oh, Welsh, Bangladesh, mix, you know. It was that part of Maidenhead where they sort of intersected. The fashion was terrible. So to liven things up, the government said, let's have a referendum on Europe. But should we talk a little bit about Britain and its relationship with Europe, how Britain came to join the common market?
Yeah, so they'd already been in the common market for 2.5 years.
Yeah, but I was going to go back
further. Macmillan and...
The earth cools and
right.
primitive life forms emerge from the swamps. Okay, let's go forward a bit to the 60s, 50s and 60s. Germany and France created this coal, iron and steel union in the 50s. Mm-hmm. Britain looked at it rather snootily and said, oh, well, that's not really for us. We've got the Commonwealth, thank you, and the Empire. But during the 1960s, I think Britain started to realise its influence was on the wane.
Right.
So you had the Suez Crisis, when Britain was humiliated on the international stage and outmaneuvered by America and forced to reverse its policy. You had the Sharpeville Massacre in South Africa, when the Commonwealth governments sort of forced Britain to accept the expulsion of South Africa from the Commonwealth. Britain thought it was leading the Commonwealth and was sort of realising perhaps it wasn't. So its international status was diminishing, and it thought, well, maybe we need to look to Europe as a place where we can have leverage and influence.
Yeah. And probably with a British sense of, we'll look to Europe and take charge.
Exactly. Very much so. It was like Macmillan thought, well, we will lead there. And to be fair, Britain's economy was much bigger at that point than France and Germany's. We were still one of the major industrial powers of the world. And still, although the other thing that's really interesting is our trade was so much more with the Commonwealth than with Europe at that point.
Right.
There'd always been this sort of empire free trade thing going on ever since the sort of Victorian times. And the actual figures meant that we, you know, traded much more with Australia, New Zealand lamb, you know, Canadian honey or whatever it was. And now, whereas all our trade is with Europe, back then it was all with the Commonwealth. So it was like, it was a much smaller deal to join the common market in 1973, because we weren't so interconnected with them as we are now. So Macmillan.
Yes.
Do you want to? Oh.
So he wanted to join the common market, and again, feeling that Britain had a role to play in leading it.
Yeah.
And of course, famously.
Who should turn up?
Old President de Gaulle.
Now, he said no in French.
Which I believe, John, if my A-level French serves me right, is no.
Oh, that's so good. I could have been there. Sounded like de Gaulle was in the room. de Gaulle, very ungratefully, after we basically made him leader of France in the war, says John with a Union Jack waistcoat popping out on him. De Gaulle owned his entire position as leader of the
Liberate
French.
Liberate his country, and that's how he fancies. Yeah,
exactly. He said no in that very rude manner. And so he vetoed Britain's application when Macmillan tried to join. Mm. But then finally de Gaulle was shuffled off the scene after the Les Événements in Paris in 68, the big uprising. So by about 1970, or just before that, I think we applied again. Right. And this time President Pompidou was all up for the idea. The Germans were up for the idea. And all the political parties were in favour of it. Labour and the Tories and the Liberals. So it was barely debated.
Right. So it was never a big general election campaign point.
No, in 1970 it was hardly mentioned, even though this thing was coming.
Right.
So we had decimalisation.
That was sort of
suggested we had to have a simpler currency because we're going to join Europe.
Of course.
And I remember the, see, I'm so old, Angela. I remember the jingle on the telly that was explaining decimalisation. It used to go, decimalisation, decimal five, decimalisation, decimal five.
Good, what, huh? Is that? What?
That was the jingle for their nightly TV programme that was explaining that the old shilling will be replaced by the 5p piece. Two shillings will be 10 new pence. And there was a programme every night before the news.
Just to get you up to speed.
So you could understand that 100 pennies in the pound, not 244 like we had before.
And it's so bizarre, isn't it? Because when you've been, you know, you were born in 1976, like me, obviously working in a base 10 system is pretty standard.
It is. And 10 fingers, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty easy, really. Yeah. I'm not quite sure how they had to.
Yeah, no, people thought it was a terrible sort of outrage that we're having to have a decimal, getting rid of the British shilling and the farthing and all those things. You know, the sort of people now, you know, campaigning for Leave were the
same.
It's
the bent banana people, isn't it?
It is the bent banana people.
Yeah.
So anyway, we had this whole thing of joining Europe and there was some very minority position of there ought to be a referendum on it. Tony Benn suggested it to the National Executive Committee of the Labour Party in 1971. Couldn't even get a seconder.
Right, so there was no appetite for it.
There was no appetite for it. It was a very fringe position. There was an organisation called Keep Britain Out. You know, golf club types, blazers, that lot. And did start organising unofficial referendums. And they
just sort of straw polls, basically.
Well, they sort of would set up their own polling stations and encourage people to come and vote. But they worked really hard and they had some money.
Yeah.
And it started to become a growing notion, this idea of a referendum. And they had quite a high turnout for these different constituencies they organised. Right. And they, of course, won these referendums because it's only their people organising.
I was going to say, isn't that, if it's the people who are organising it who are going to push for the people to come out?
But so they got 50% turnout in one constituency in Gloucester.
Really?
Yeah. So they got a lot of people coming out. There's one place where in Beckenham where they the pro-market local MP organised activists and a campaign, and then it was defeated. So it was in Beckenham.
Right. This is a bit like holding a referendum in a golf club about whether golf is good or not, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not really. A bit like that, yeah. Yeah. But, and then there was more bad PR when the French had a referendum on whether they should enlarge the EC and allow in Britain, you know.
Right.
And the French got a say and the British didn't. So it was like, hang on a minute.
That's so typically British, isn't it? Yeah. No, we're not interested. Wait, what? The French are doing what?
Yes, exactly right. So Britain's application was accepted. And by this time, this was under Ted Heath, the Tory Prime Minister, from 70 to 74.
And he was pretty pro-Europe, right?
He was passionately pro-Europe. Yeah. You have to understand, this is a generation that had fought in the war.
Well, that's it. The Second World War is in adults' living memories.
Yeah. They'd been on the beaches of Anzio. Heath had been shot at in a tank. And, you know, in the more recent times when he was alive and there were these Brexiteer types, he said to them, have you ever been shot at in a tank? And this young sort of anti-EU person was going, no. And he goes, well, I have. And I want to, make sure it never happens again. Yeah. They were motivated by peace.
Yeah. Well, whereas now we have obviously Leave voters also use World War II rhetoric, but in a very different way.
And completely.
Because they weren't being shot at in a tank.
Absolutely.
They were not born or were children, you know.
Francois going, my dad didn't fight on the beaches at Dunkirk.
Do you think your dad would want to do it again?
Yeah, yeah. And also your dad didn't fight on the beaches at Dunkirk, Francois, so shut up. They use the current sort of Leavers, Brexiteers lot, use World War II completely erroneously.
Yeah.
Churchill had suggested a union between Britain and France. And he was in favour of a united Europe.
Yeah.
And so whenever they start talking about it, they get their history wrong.
Yeah.
And the generation that actually did fight in the war were passionate about seeing it never happen again. Having had World War I, then World War II, if we trade together, we cooperate together in institutions, we'll have less reason to go to war with one another.
Yeah, because trade, money being more powerful.
Yeah, money always counts. Money talks.
Yeah.
So anyway, terrible abuse of human rights occurred when Ted Heath attempted to speak French. The poor French had to listen to Ted Heath going, nous sommes très contents de entrer la European Union. He was...
at least he had a go and didn't just speak English louder and slower. Like, yeah, that's a step up from most
England,
people.
England, joino, marketo.
Yeah.
So, 1st of January 1973, England joined at the same time as Ireland and Denmark.
And this is a time when you're starting to get quite fashionable.
That's right.
You're starting to get packet holidays, I guess, happening.
Yes, people start to fly to Spain. Continental quilts. I remember my mum buying me a continental quilt.
Yeah.
Sheets and blankets. Oh, no, we're going continental. And I remember thinking what a Swiss continental breakfasts were.
Oh, yeah, because no bacon.
Yeah, no bacon and egg. No, it's just a roll and a black coffee. It's like, oh.
That's cheese for breakfast.
I know. So that was the whole thing.
Food?
There was, and me at school, we had a lesson called European Studies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so there's this one lesson a week where we learned about this train in France called the Mistral, or we'd, you know, learn about just different systems of government in Europe, which is quite forward-looking, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I remember there's a special 50p piece minted with nine hands joining on the back to celebrate the nine members of the EU. One of them was small, and Luxembourg complained about the little hand.
Oh, really?
Yes. Poor Luxembourg with its little hands.
Luxembourg got something in common with Donald Trump.
Yes, exactly, little hands. So, it was very very fashionable, suddenly, Europe. And there was town twinning. I remember going to our school trip to Bad Godesberg. Our town was twinned with Bad Godesberg.
We were twinned with...
Rheine
in Nordrhein-Westfalen. I went on two exchange trips to Rheine because we were Maidstone was twinned with.
Okay, well, Maiden.
We were twinned with somewhere in France as well, but I can't remember where.
We were Maidenhead. I am not Maid. People always get Maidstone mixed up with.
Oh,
Maidenhead.
Yes, you're Maidenhead. I'm Maidstone.
Yes, yeah. We were Bad Godesberg and Saint-Claude in France and Frascati in Italy. I remember that because we had three new roads built in Maidenhead.
Frascati is just the wine.
Yeah. But we were all, as schoolboys, had to go to the, we had dinner with the mayor at the mayor's building, this 300 schoolboys or something, and they gave us sauerkraut. Can you imagine a bunch of English boys in the 70s being served sauerkraut?
Excuse me, sir, I think your cabbage is off.
It's disgusting. So, yeah. So anyway, very fashionable, Europe. But it did divide the Labour Party particularly. Yeah. Tony Benn was pushing for a referendum, Michael Foot and Barbara Castle, Peter Shaw. And inside the Labour Party, they started to persuade Wilson that it would help Labour's chances at the next general election if they promised a referendum. Right. Sounds familiar?
It's ringing some bells.
Yeah.
A referendum was sort of posed as a way to mend a divided
party.
Yes.
So 1974, there was political stalemate, two general elections in 1974.
Yeah.
Labour sort of lost the first one, but managed to be run a minority government, then won a tiny majority.
Limped across the line.
Limped across the line in October 74. We had a day off school every time there was an election. Two elections in 74, the referendum, Princess Anne getting married. There was most days you weren't at school in that period. Ben won the day at on the NEC and at conference and persuaded the party.
Finally got a seconder.
He got a seconder and he persuaded the party that we were going to have a referendum, that Wilson was going to go to the EU, negotiate a better deal.
Again, ringing some bells. I know.
He went to Dublin on this thing, but there were seven key points, and he claimed to have got five of the points he was asking for. So he didn't claim to have a total victory, and he said he got five out of seven. And so Labour said, we're going to have a referendum when we come to power, which they did in 74. There was a massive argument about whether on the wording of the question.
Yeah.
Should it be Britain will be in the common market or stay in the common market?
Well, there's an argument, isn't there, for people who want to maintain the status quo.
So exactly.
If you say stay in the common market.
Yes.
But what, everything stays as it is? Yeah, I'll go for that.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of, yeah,
I don't like change.
When I was a Labour candidate back in the 2001 general election, there was a lot of argument about the wording of the referendum on whether Britain should join the euro, which was being touted about as an idea at the time.
Right, yeah.
And this one public meeting, this Conservative got up and said, I think the wording of the question should be, do you want to surrender your country to the Germans? Give or take a comma or a colon.
same question.
Exactly. So, but here's a crucial difference between the 75 referendum and now, and that is Wilson was going to stay out of it. He thought, I don't want the voters making this a referendum on me as Prime Minister.
Right, because it's not a general election.
It's not a general election. So I'll have my ministers will be free to campaign on either side. And they did very vigorously, although, you know, not too personally in the way that it got in 2016. But he stayed out of it. And I think that was probably one of the key differences.
Yeah.
There were quite a lot of people who were not sure whether we were in Europe or not anyway.
Right. But that's how small an issue it was.
It's like that Peep Show bit when Jeremy goes, stop going on about the euro, Mark. We're in it now. Get used to it. We're not in the euro, Jeremy. the campaign began 1975. So I think we should have a break to get out of these flared trousers and take off these stripy tank tops and so people can go get a cup of tea.
Good. These platforms are killing me.
Welcome back to the We Are History podcast.
Hello.
We're talking 1975, the Euro referendum.
Yes, we are. And so we've got to the point
where
a referendum's going to happen.
Yep.
Harold Wilson's gone and negotiated some new terms.
Yep.
With the EEC.
It's a different time.
Different time.
ABBA had just won the Eurovision Song Contest.
Oh, had they? What song?
Waterloo, about, you know, a different form of European integration.
Yes.
That was a victory in England, in fact, at Brighton. They won that.
Was it in Brighton?
Yes, where you live.
Well,
that amazing performance at Waterloo where Napoleon did surrender.
Yeah, now happened in Brighton.
I've met my destiny in quite a similar way. interesting thing about that particular Eurovision, that the Portuguese entry that year, when that were played, that was a signal for the revolution, the Red Carnation Revolution, to start in Portugal.
Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. When it was played on the Portuguese radio, all the revolutionaries said, that now sees the TV station, sees the instruments of government and the press. Well, Eurovision. Wow. Who knew?
Maybe we should do an episode on Eurovision.
We should do a whole episode on Eurovision. 1968. Cliff Richard actually won Eurovision, but Franco, because it was in Spain, nobbled the judges and made it so that Spain won.
Really?
Yeah, there's a whole book on it.
I didn't know you were so Eurovision clued up, John.
This is the proper history. Never mind the Congress of Vienna and World War II. It's Eurovision. That's what we want to know about.
You think, like, nobbling the countries who your country with, it's a bit obvious.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's like, come on, Cliff has got to win.
Right? Cliff's in it. Cliff. He's winning it.
So ABBA in the charts, 1975, and Britain now is having its first ever referendum. And remember that, I thought I'd turn that off.
Oh, John.
Sorry about this, everyone. We're back on. So I should say that whilst we had that break, Angela had to phone Radio Lincolnshire for an interview about a gig. That is glamorous, Angela.
I know. Will the glamour ever begin?
Yeah. What were they asking you about?
What they always ask you about when you do these local radio phone-ins. Yeah. I mean, God bless them. They're doing the best.
They're promoting your gigs.
They're promoting my gigs, and that's the main thing. I'm on tour, by the way. Come along. I mean, I might not be by the time this gets put out. Who knows what will happen? We might have left the EU. We might not have left the EU. Could be an apocalyptic wasteland. Who knows? If you are listening in an apocalyptic wasteland, well done for managing to tune in.
And Angela's doing a gig at the designated power station.
I said to you before they phoned, I said, they'll ask me what it's like being a woman in comedy. And they didn't disappoint.
what's it like being a woman in comedy, Angela?
Comedian Beck Hill has the perfect answer to that question. When she gets asked, what's it like being a woman in comedy? She says it's exactly the same as being a man, except you get asked that question, which is pretty much what it is. Oh, God.
I get to do those little radio local phone-ins when I've got a book out, which I haven't had for a while.
Course,
You go into a little sort of cupboard in BH, Broadcasting House in London, and you do loads back-to-back. You do Radio Jersey, you do Radio Northern Ireland or whatever. I remember one time I was in there and I'd just done four or five in a row and I went on BBC Radio Three Counties. And they said,
which three counties is it?
So they said, John, are you doing any events in the area? I went, oh!
You're going to have to
In a couple of the counties, yep, yeah. love those counties. I think all over the counties, really.
So, have you found out since what the three counties are?
I think we should not tell our listeners.
It's
Buckinghamshire, Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire. So it's the bit that got left out when they allocated all the other radio stations But yeah, so that's the glamour of local radio, folks. And now podcasts have probably replaced that. So hopefully you're listening to this in the three counties and you're not offended. Sorry. Sorry if you're a three
sorry,
counties
BBC,
listener.
Lincolnshire. Thank you for having me on.
To the referendum.
Yes.
Tony Benn. He was the sort of most prominent figure for In, a sort of a bit of a bogeyman by this point for the Conservatives and for the mainstream media.
And he was a sort of Jeremy Corbyn.
He was of his day, although he'd been a minister and had been in government and stuff. He'd been Postmaster General and had defied the House of Lords and all sorts. But he by this point, was sort of seen as a bit of a swivel-eyed loon. And he dominated the campaign, the Out campaign, to the delight of In. So remember, it was called Out and In back then, not Remain and Leave.
Right, yeah.
And so when they started, Out was way out in front with the polls.
Right.
What they didn't have was money. They have money and they didn't have newspapers and they're behind them and they didn't have
celebrities.
It's
interesting because big business was quite vocally on the side of staying in.
Absolutely.
Obviously. Whereas in the 2016 referendum, obviously big business were a little bit more cautious because of social media and because of getting their reputations.
Right, interesting.
Coming out on either side could affect their popularity.
Yeah.
So, but in the 1975 referendum, I think they donated a lot of money to those campaigns.
Right. Well, I mean, the Conservative Party was the most pro-European party back then.
Yeah.
Which is amazing when you think of the contrast.
Yeah.
And so all the papers, all the newspapers were in favour of being in. So the Sunday Express, the Daily Mail, the Daily Telegraph, they're all for being in Europe.
I guess... because if you look at the backdrop they're against in the 70s, with the height of the Cold War, and the right wing in Britain, terrified of any Soviet influence or any socialism creeping in. And yeah, I suppose they saw Europe as a defence against that rather than...
So the Morning Star was in favour of coming out.
Yeah.
And the Spectator, weirdly. Those are the only two publications that were in favour of coming out. All the others were in favour of coming in. So you had a huge bias in the media for staying in.
Yeah.
Plus you had they had money. So they managed to raise 9 million, Britain in Europe, whereas the guys from the other side managed to raise £9,000. So where the government said both sides can have a free mail shot to every address in Britain.
Right.
And the Out campaign said, oh, we can't afford that many envelopes. We can't send, there was like 3 full-time staff, whereas there's, you know, teams and teams of people working for the Keep Britain In campaign.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very one-sided referendum.
Yeah. And also the I keep wanting to call it the Remain campaign, but the In campaign, as it was then, it made an effort to speak to different people, like in a way that the the 2016 referendum didn't. When you've got, and I guess if you go back to the background, so we've had the 3-day week, you've had the threat of petrol rationing and oil crisis and all of that. You're with that background. We still had an industry.
Yeah, yeah.
It's before Maggie came in and wiped that out.
Yeah, yeah.
So people understood that, if the economy suffers, they could lose their jobs.
They see it.
They can see it, and they saw the...
We saw the lights go out with a miner strike and electrician strike.
So that fear was there. Yeah. Whereas in 2016, of course, if you're, living in what was a mining community in the Northeast, where there's been no industry for the last 30 years... David Cameron telling you the economy is going to be affected. So what? All that means to people in 2016 is the banks, right?
And also you think, well, I want to stick 2 fingers up to David Cameron anyway because I blame you.
Yeah, exactly.
So Wilson staying out of it, I think, was quite important.
Yeah.
But there was, even though they had all the advantages, the In campaign, they weren't complacent because in 1972, Norway had a referendum and everyone had expected them to come into the EU and they voted against it. One young sort of lawyer led the campaign and astounded everyone when Norway voted not to join the European Union or EEC as it was then, the Economic Community. And so they thought, well, that could happen with us. It's quite possible it could swing
I guess that took away that sense of complacency that obviously Cameron had.
Cameron had the complacency because he was like, oh, I won the AV referendum, I won the Scottish referendum. And he told the European leaders, Merkel and Jospin, I think he said, don't worry, I'm a winner. Ugh. And it's like, oh, God. Anyway, so there was nothing, as you say, was left a chance.
Yeah.
And it was really, really thorough. So unlike Cameron, who went, well, just hold the referendum and, I'll win it. They really, really had it all nailed down beforehand and knew what they were doing, the In campaign. They had sports stars for Europe. They had, with Henry Cooper going, don't knock Britain out, the great heavyweight boxing champion.
Well, that's a real bit of genius using sports stars, isn't it?
Yeah, because
sports people are patriotic. They play
they
for their country.
The company, absolutely.
So if you are a Union Jack wearing
patriot,
you can't argue with that, really,
can
you?
England cricket captain Colin Cowdrey, don't hit Britain out. Olympic gold medalist Mary Peters, don't run Britain out. These were all on posters and leaflets. So they had every area you can imagine covered with things like Marge Proops, the Daily Mirror's problem columnist.
Agnew,
that's the word. She was very prominent in the In campaign. And they had a women's campaign as well. Yeah. That started off quite badly because they had, they thought, well, let's have a beauty contest. Let's have large-breasted women in T-shirts saying Europe or bust.
That's going to really get women interested.
I know. And then one of the things they said, there's a bit of a problem that the Europe or bust, the exclamation mark looks like a question mark when she wears it.
Oh, God.
It's just the level. It's the 70s, Angela.
Oh, it's different times.
Yes, Miss Europa, Europe the Luscious beauty contest was cancelled.
Oh, good.
Actually. But there was a canal boat going through Birmingham with all the women in national costumes, of all 9 national costumes, which I think is a very good way of showing European unity. I love a canal boat, me.
Oh, yeah. Especially whenever you go on your canal boat, you have women in
I've
national costume.
I've always got women in national costume on my narrow boat. There was Writers for Europe. I'd like to see in that one. Oh, give me a bit longer. I haven't quite worked out the slogan yet. There was Actors for Europe, Sports Stars for Europe, I said. The Britain in Europe campaign vetoed Wombles for Europe.
Was that actually?
It was suggested by Giles Brandreth, who was a young.
But everyone loved the Wombles. If the Wombles came out, there'd be no contest.
Best-selling artists of 1974.
Remember, you're a Womble.
They're the best-selling band of 1974. The Wombles, not ABBA.
No.
Waterloo, or Wings. It was the Wombles. So yeah, I mean, Great Uncle Bulgaria. He's got to be for in, hasn't he?
Of course, yeah.
Madame Cholet.
Madame Cholet.
They're going to be
yeah.
in, aren't they? So yeah, and they had.
Of course, but now if they came out, it'd be like bloody Wombles coming yeah. over here taking our jobs.
Wouldn't it? It'd be all racist. Well, we've got no British Wombles. So yes, we had, as I said, we had the bus.
Page three girl,
Beverly Pilkington.
Wow.
Yes, and
she was
She was the KP Nuts girl. Do you remember the KP Nuts thing?
Oh, is that the way you bought the nuts to reveal the tits?
Yeah. Amazing. I wasn't going to put it like that, Angela, but you've done it. But then the Out campaign had a Lady Godiva figure in a body stocking riding through Coventry saying...
Well, that's much more sophisticated.
Yes, saying something about, oh, don't lose our taxes or something. Basically, it was a woman with her kit off. Both sides had women with their kits off, let's be clear. But they got a bit better at it, the In campaign. They used Shirley Williams, they used Shirley Williams and... or some posh Tory lords, women, I can't remember their names, but they were on every, there was always a woman on the panel. And
of course you had Thatcher.
Mrs. Thatcher was the leader of the opposition at this
leader
point.
Leader of the opposition.
She's just in the job.
Sort of representing the housewives of Britain. Mm. You know, and she, at that time, this is before she's, you know.
Yeah, but become Prime Minister.
Become Prime Minister and decimated industry and done all the things that she did.
She was pro-Europe, madly pro-Europe. She wore, the cover of the book that I read most actually is Yes to Europe.
It was a great book. That's the one I read as well.
Yeah, the 1975 referendum and 70s Britain.
By Robert Saunders.
Yes, Queen Mary University of London. And on the cover is a picture of Maggie in her famous jumper. Have you got it there?
Look. I have indeed. Her knitted. I want one.
Her knitted. I wonder where that is now, that jumper. It's a jumper with all the flags of Europe, all nine at that point, on Mrs. Thatcher's front.
Although she's on this picture, John, she's holding a flaming torch, which has a bit of a Brexit
set fire to the north.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Thatcher, I mean, very pro-Europe. All the Tories were very pro-Europe.
I think a lot of them were not sort of... Because I heard it described that Thatcher wasn't necessarily an enthusiast, but she was a realist.
Right.
You know, and so knew that... Whereas I think Ted Heath was a real... Or even, Ted Heath on that side and Roy Jenkins were proper...
Passionately
Europeans. I think your Harold Wilsons and your...
Yes, they're
Thatcher,
more pragmatic about it.
Much more pragmatic and much more... Because I think Harold Wilson described himself as a Commonwealth man.
Right.
Really, but he understood that...
Yes.
I think he said, I'm pro-Europe with my head, but not with my heart.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Whereas, and I think Thatcher was probably the same.
Yeah, but there's quite a lot of people in the middle who, as you say, were passionate about the project of European peace. You know, like the Roy Jenkins and the Dennis Healy's and the Shirley Williams.
Yeah.
People who lived through seen two world wars and thought we must never let that happen again.
Absolutely.
But yes, the Conservatives were the most in pro-Europe party. The Federation of Conservative Students organised a poster, always an organisation to be relied upon for their good taste. They had Holocaust victims and they said, victims of a divided Europe. So, of course, the Board of Jewish Deputies questioned the taste of this and it was taken down. Mm. The Out campaign got Barbara Castle to go over to Brussels with her shopping basket and
Sorry, I have to stop you. I really thought you said Barbara Cartland.
Maybe I did say Barbara Cartland. That would have been so interesting. The Out campaign with Barbara Castle and maybe Barbara Cartland went as well. I don't know, with her Pekingese and her pink hair. Barbara Castle, who actually had quite striking
hair. You might not have
said
it, but it's just what I heard.
Barbara Castle went over to Brussels and got a shopping basket with all the goods and what they cost in Brussels and to compare them with the same goods in Britain. Mm. She didn't do the press stunt till the next day, and the In campaign had a mole inside the Out campaign, knew this was happening, so got their one of their front runners, Vicky Cranshaw, to go to Oslo, which was just voted to be out, and showed it was three times more expensive if you were out, and completely up and beat them to the pitch on the press stunt. And suddenly Out thought, oh no, not only we haven't got the funding, not only have we got three members of staff, but I think one of them is a spy anyway.
Oh God. And then the one stunt we managed to afford to do has been completely undercut.
So the only sort of significant People for Out were like the left-leaning National Union of Students.
Yeah.
A young Charles Clark, future Home Secretary, he was a student. Wow. He led the National Union of Students, and they were out for Out. But and then the, and this is really comes down to what I remember when being 13 was the most important deciding factor, and that was the casting.
Yeah.
So you had Tony Benn seen as a bogey figure.
Yeah.
Enoch Powell, very much a bogey figure, on the far right of the Conservative Party. Then you had Ian Paisley. Yeah, so, and then in terms of organisations, National Front were for Out, the Communist Party were for Out, the Soviet Union wanted us to come out. So I remember a cartoon in one of the newspapers that just showed this march with these characters on, and it just said something like March of the Extremists. And it, I think that's, I think that was a big difference between 1975 and 2016.
Yeah.
The moment that Gove went for leave and then Boris followed him, it suddenly gave permission to the Conservative members to vote leave.
Yeah, yeah. Until then, it had been bogeymen, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was. Farage. It was like Farage and people you wouldn't want to be associated with if you were a respectable English person, you know.
Yeah.
I was speaking to Will Straw the other day at some pub or something, and who ran the Remain campaign.
Right. Yeah.
And he said that Boris coming out for leave made 4% difference in the 2016 referendum, which is enough to swing it. So if Boris had followed his other editorial that he drafted about staying in...
It's just so mad, isn't it?
And the whole history of our country is different because of that influence that man had on Conservative voters. He thought that Tories... Well, Straw had thought, they'd all thought beforehand that Tories would split 50-50, remain and leave. Yeah. They ended up being 60-40, and that was enough to do it. But the casting in 1975 was crucial. All the people that... People who weren't that interested in politics and were just ordinary people going around their business, they sort of respected Shirley Williams and, even Ted Heath or Dennis Healey or the Liberal Party. And they thought these moderate, sensible people seem to be for staying in.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think that had a big factor.
It was such a flip, isn't it, of what happened in 2016, where you had...
Yeah.
I mean, Tony Benn, he did refuse to share a platform with Enoch Powell, but he didn't refuse to share a platform with Ian Paisley. Right?
Oh, really? That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I've seen this with them together, and you just...
I see. I mean, Enoch Powell probably is worse than Ian Paisley. They're both
dreadful. Well, yeah, but I mean, both dreadful.
Yeah. But so, they said that No had all the best tunes, but In had all the best singers.
And,
I think that made a massive difference. There was a slight worry, so we got close to polling day.
Yeah.
It was a slight worry when Leeds United were cheated out of the European Cup in the final in 1975. So I remember watching that game and they'd had a goal disallowed and they were fouled and the referee seemed to be so against them. Right. Bayern Munich got two late goals and everyone was outraged.
In this country, that could be enough,
yeah,
right?
They thought, is this going to swing anything? But anyway, it came to polling day and there was I remember a strong sense that Remain was gonna win this. Mm. And then Yes, as it was called then. There was some pressure to have the result counted centrally in London, have it all in Earl's Court or somewhere, to hide the regional differences.
Right, yeah.
Then people said, well, Winnie Ewing of the Scottish National Party said, you know, she would tie herself to the ballot boxes or whatever to see, she would lie in front of them. They were worried that it would embarrass MPs who are at odds with their local constituencies if they were voting a different way. In the end, it was done by county, I think.
Right.
And I don't know, have you looked at the results?
I have. A really interesting flip to what happened.
They? Absolutely.
Because Lincolnshire came out.
It's like 66%.
In. Whereas obviously they were the highest, I think.
Yeah.
75% leave, I think, in the 2016.
Yeah. And what's so fascinating, no difference between town and country, no difference between, you know, Labour areas, rural, Tory areas, no difference between... industrial heartlands or it's all two-thirds right across the country.
What's interesting is the way so that England came out very pro in whereas Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland
slightly less so
well, and Scotland, that, again, that, is a flip of what happened
absolutely
in, apart from Wales maybe, but
yeah,
a flip of what happened in
and then Western Isles I think was the only area to have a majority for out. Maybe Western Isles and somewhere like Skye or somewhere, but the fringes of Scotland were for out. I think Orkney might have been for out as well.
Right.
Or Shetland. But it's amazing that, that it was so overwhelming.
Yeah.
And it two-thirds in favour of being in the common market. Britain stayed in the common market. Harold Wilson could move on. Thought, well, he's in for a long time. But, you know, things changed. Tony Benn was demoted. Britain's membership of the common market and European Union was settled and never became a political issue ever again. Harold Wilson shocked the whole nation the following year by resigning and stepping down at a time of his own choosing. No one saw that coming.
No.
But the issue didn't go away, of course.
No.
In 1983, Labour was for out. Labour put it in its manifesto that it would leave the common market.
Well, it was a really interesting thing happened, didn't it? I think as soon as the referendum was over in 75, the Britain for In campaign, or whatever it was called, Britain for Europe, just disbanded. They're like, right, job done, over. Yeah. Whereas the out campaigners rallied and sort of continued their work and kept that
flame
argument going, kept the flame going until 2016, arguably. Yeah, until
You had Thatcher becoming more and more sceptical, then you had Maastricht, you had Major dealing with that, Maastricht. I don't even remember the year Tony Blair got in 1997 when he got in. There was a referendum party.
I do remember
funded
that,
by James Goldsmith. Yeah. VHS put through everyone's letterbox with a bloke from That's Life, you know, arguing for a referendum, which was like, really? We're going to have a referendum on Europe? Didn't we have one of those?
Yeah.
And that little seed was planted in the
hey, guys, you lost. Get over it.
Yeah, that's it.
Right?
So... So the seed was planted in 97, and finally Cameron acceded to this in 2013, the idea of it, and 3 years later, a coalition of chaos followed.
It's so interesting, isn't it, that a referendum is a parliamentary tool to fix problems that within parties.
Yes.
Because Europe is such a, there's no party divide in it. You know, unless you're UKIP, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're pretty solid on what
they want. Yeah, I think they're pretty good on the EU Brexit and party Brexit now. Party.
But, you know, within Labour and Conservative Party, you can't, they had no choice.
They did have a choice. I think both of them had a choice. And I think it was probably irresponsible of Labour to do it in 75 and definitely irresponsible of Cameron to do it in 2016. The one difference I will make is that Wilson played it right in 75 and they did the groundwork. Yeah. Cameron did it completely wrong.
Yeah.
Put too much stock in the negotiation he was going to get and the changes and misjudged. He presumed he had the papers in his pocket. He presumed he had Gove and Johnson in his pocket.
Yeah.
And
just, it just seems to me as simple as just not talking to Nigel Farage was out there convincing, particularly the working classes that, you know, A, immigration's the issue and these people are taking your jobs. And B, I'm your mate, you can trust me.
Yeah. Whereas neither of which are true.
None of which are true. I want to say Nigel Farage wouldn't be seen dead in a pub with a working class person. and Cameron's, the Remain campaign just didn't talk to those people. Whereas in 1975, you know, you had supermarkets giving away Yes to Europe carrier bags. You know, you had people being spoken to by TV personalities and things that just reaching out to those people.
Giles Brandreth.
Whereas they just didn't, it was just assumed.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that arrogant assumption, of the sort of that class particularly.
Yes.
And that kind of politician that is the career politician of Cameron, that people will just assume that we know best.
Yes, and I think and after expenses and after... The hacking scandal. It's like those people inside the M25 can fuck off. Is basically what it was.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
But anyway, we're talking about the 2016 referendum now. We're getting on our high horses. Yeah. It's still very much in flux as we make this podcast.
Yeah,
and
this podcast could be outdated before it's even released.
Yes, yes. But 1975 is a watershed in British politics. Yeah. A different time when. Labour and the Conservatives dominated the House of Commons before there was Scottish nationalism as a big thing, before the Liberal Party, you know, really built up its vote. And, you know, everyone who played a part in that referendum, you know, following year, Wilson resigned. Following year, Jeremy Thorpe was in trouble for trying to kill people. And Mrs. Thatcher would soon become Prime Minister for 11 years. So,
and then everything ended happily ever after.
I think we sort of covered the 1975 referendum. Is there anything else that you're itching to tell us about?
That's But I think, you know, it was a referendum. The people spoke and we should abide by their decision.
It's one each. Yeah. It's one each. So I'm for having a decider.
Yeah.
Or, you know. So if you thank you for listening to We Are History. If you enjoyed it, give us 5 stars on
you know, iTunes or wherever you listen to it.
Your Amazon Podcasts, book chart or whatever you do.
Listen to us. How old are we?
The pop charts.
We don't know what we're talking about.
The hit parade.
on the podcast hit parade.
Yes, yes. Rate us, share us, subscribe, whatever you do.
Follow us on Twitter at We Are History Pod.
And just generally keep listening.
Yeah. And before we go, can we just say thank you to our wonderful producer, Spike Aylward.
Spike Aylward is here with the headphones on. He gets us the gear.
He can listen to us drone on forever.
About the olden days.
Yeah, and then he has to cut out all the bits we fluffed, which is a lot.
It is.
You think you're listening to this going, God, they fluff a lot.
This was 3 days.
Not half of it, mate.
This is 3 days of us talking cut down. Thank you, Spike. Thank you, Angela.
Thank you, John.
See you next time on We Are History.
See ya.